Welcome, True Believer readers, to another episode of Let's Read Spider-Man. Today we're going to talk about Spectacular Spider-Man 134, 135, and 136, the second Sin Eater saga. Here to discuss with me the title change to Spectacular Spider-Man for these comics is my friend Eddie.
Hello, James B. And I do want to discuss the title. We've dropped the Peter Parker part of the Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man. As far as I can tell, it's just to simplify the title, which I think is a great move.
Yeah, it's really hard to keep typing capital P, lowercase t, capital S, M, and some people don't want to put the T in there. And like Spectacular Spider-Man, I just hope it's just SSM and everyone knows what we're talking about. So,
I mean, Peter Parker is very important and I do like him so much in Spider-Man, but let's be honest, this is a book about Spider-Man, right?
Yeah, when I do the intro and I have to read the little, you know, from January, et cetera, that's going to save me a good second and a half now.
There we go.
Let's test it out. From January of 1988, Stan Lee presents The Spectacular Spider-Man 134, Sincere, by Peter David, pencils by Sal Buscema, and inks by Vince Coletta.
A group of doctors is arguing about releasing Stan Carter, a.k.a. he's the Sin Eater, on grounds that the drugs S.H.I.E.L.D. administered to him are out of his system and he is no longer a threat to society. As Stan waits for his parole board, we see his evil alternate personality looming over him, encouraging him to do bad things. The board does release Stan, although it's only been 1 year since he's, you know, committed these crimes. Peter reads about the release in the newspaper and abruptly leaves MJ to go and warn Stan that if he steps out of line, Spider-Man will be there. But when he confronts Stan, he finds a stuttering, apologetic, feeble man asking for forgiveness. Stan thanks Spider-Man for breaking his jaw, even though it left him mentally broken. Spidey, unable to process the fact that he might have lost control of himself and punched Stan too hard, leaves in anger.
When I read this, I thought maybe Stan Carter was joking, but I'll tell the listeners that he's not joking. It wasn't a trick in any way. Part one of this book really wants to portray the right and wrong of jailing a mentally ill patient and discussing when to free them. And Peter David has Mary Jane argue some controversial points as Peter is getting angry. It should be noted that like this evil alternate personality, which is drawn as the, you know, the costume Sin Eater, seems to be opposed to the wishes of Stan Carter, who seems sincere. It's a very effective storytelling tool.
Hmm. On the streets of New York City, Max Dillon, a.k.a. he's Electro, decides not to don his lightning suspenders and instead robs a jewelry store in his typical clothes with a toy gun and a lot of electricity. The new scheme is going well until Spidey shows up, but Spidey, still questioning the control of his strength, fails to knock out Max when he's got the chance. Then a new and unexpected twist occurs in this fight. Max charges the air with static electricity, and Spider-Man can no longer stick to walls. He plummets into a car below, and Max leaves Spidey alive because...
too simple. He's no threat to me anymore. I want him alive. Alive to know that this town and his life belong to me, Electro!
Static electricity affects Spider-Man's sticking power. This is amazing. But let's talk about this more later.
Yeah, I was also surprised that this power just came up, you know, 240 books in. This book does have a nice flashback summary, mostly told by the doctors. I also thought this had a cute scene with Mary Jane and Peter as, you know, frisky newlyweds. And two villains with a plot that was not too simple and not too complex. Sign me up. Sure, Electro should have killed them. That was the only misstep in this book. Villains do that to Spider-Man all the time. So overall, Eddie, I approve of this book.
Speaking of the newlyweds, Peter and MJ, is it marriage that's making Spider-Man soft? I feel like he's getting beat up and knocked out by just about anybody and everybody these days. And like you said, Electro lets Spider-Man go, but they need to stop putting villains in a situation where they have a clear opportunity to kill Spider-Man. It's just not fun.
Yeah, because they don't take advantage of
it. Yeah, you're like, no, now's the thing that you've wanted to do for a really long time, and you're just going to run away. Okay.
Unless I could give them a stronger reason.
True. Some sort of dilemma.
The theme seems to be, I'm not going to kill you because I want to humiliate you. Like, yes. I can take care of you later. I've seen that a couple times, but...
I'd love, who am I without Spider-Man as my adversary?
Or Electro's not a murderer. I'm a criminal.
Oh, yeah, there you go. That's an even better one.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll have a book where that doesn't happen in the next book. And that next book is from February of 1988. Stanley presents Spectacular Spider-Man 135, Synthesis, by David M. Buscema.
Spidey lay groggily as the owner of the Chrysler he fell on looks to administer a beating. But Stan Carter saves Spider-Man by threatening the crowd with a realistic-looking toy gun. Peter heads home, where MJ's worried about him being covered in electrical burns. Peter is irritated by the lack of privacy in his home, and that he has to explain to MJ that he feels badly about hurting Stan Carter. MJ says to him,
"You know, lover, I think that's why I fell for you. You're the only person I know who's more screwed up than I am."
As a proponent of mental health awareness, that's not a great thing to say about Peter or yourself, MJ.
I don't think it was meant to be taken that literally.
It's such dark, like such a bad tone. I don't like it.
I think she's just trying to make fun of him and cover it up with some self-deprecation. But I understand. Eddie, you mentioned that Stan saves Spidey from the crowd. This really bothers Spider-Man in so many ways because who is saving him?
All right.
I want to make sure the listeners knew that.
Well, continuing the story, Stan is questioned in a hostile manner at the local precinct until he is bailed out by a man who wants to be his manager. As Stan gets into a taxi, he tells the carpetbagger to leave him alone so he can live his life. But Stan's life as a convicted murderer is not easy. No one wants anything to do with him. With few options, he returns to the loudmouth manager, who books him an appearance on a talk show. Peter's watching the show because a guest is using MJ as one of her fashion models. Spidey swings into the live broadcast, accusing Carter of profiting from Jean DeWolf's death, only to discover that Carter and Jean were lovers.
Electro sees Spider-Man on TV, and he shows up to humiliate Spidey. Spider-Man's too afraid of hurting anyone in the audience, and he's afraid he'll accidentally kill Max Dillon, or he'll be electrocuted himself, just stands down. This book ends with a confused audience, and Electro departs laughing. Eddie, I can't give this series enough credit for having the Sin Eater costume ghost taunting Stan Carter and thinking evil thoughts. At one point, Stan yells to the ghost, and he's like, "Go away!" But the ghost is like a ghost, you know?
Yeah.
So Spider-Man thinks it's him that's being yelled at.
Yeah.
Eddie, I missed out on these books by a year when I was reading back in the old days. What a nice treat for me to read them now. I'm really enjoying them.
Well, James B., let's hope you enjoyed the last book. And it's from March of 1988. Stan Lee presents Spectacular Spider-Man 136, Sinister, once again by David and Buscema. We begin with Peter rehashing to MJ his fear that he'll lose control like he did when he pummeled Sin Eater the first time. But a power outage sends him swinging away to get some pictures.
MJ tells him he needs to apologize to Stan or else he won't be able to get past this mental block and he won't be able to fight anymore. She references Rocky III and Mr. T in her solution.
Great dated references. Meanwhile, Stan is recording a memoir, and as he is telling the details of DeWolf's death, his alternate personality, this is the Sin Eater, the ghost that looms over him, takes over his mind and... Sin Eater's back. As Spider-Man swings about helping citizens during the blackout, he stops by Stan's apartment to apologize for maiming him. Stan puts his mask on after Spidey departs for the Con Ed power station. There, Spidey finds Electro demanding $10 million to turn the lights back on. Spidey regains his confidence and one punches Electro. While outside, Sin Eater takes a child hostage in front of the police. When he pushes the child aside and brandishes his shotgun, the police open fire. Spider-Man and Sergeant Torque hear Stan's last words.
"I've won. Sin Eater's dead. Now I can live." Eddie, something about these books I wanted to bring up real quick is that Electro was, you know, on the cover of these books, and I was thinking, why is Electro part of my Sin Eater saga? And then I realized Electro needs to be here because Spider-Man doesn't fight the Sin Eater in these books. It's got to fight someone. So, but before we talk more about all these books and my opinion of this series, we no longer have the Pasteput Pete Network.
Darn!
Well, and we're a couple episodes away from a new format. I think it's going to come up in Let's Read Spider-Man 246. So I don't want to just read the sponsor like I do for Amazing Spider-Man or copy something we do for another show. So Eddie, just for these next two Spectacular Spider-Man episodes, would you be okay reading the sponsor, just something different?
Great. Sure, James B.
All right. Take it away, Eddie.
Are you haunted by an alter ego like the Sin Eater? Are you tormented because your roommate leaves dirty dishes in the sink? Are you regretting not buying that extra copy of The Amazing Spider-Man 300? It's time to put those nightmares to an end. Stan Carter and Associates will give you great ways to end your life and end your troubles. From being shot by police to assisting you with electrocution in the tub will make you forget about your troubles. Stan Carter and Associates, when you are too feeble to deal with your own issues yourself.
Great job, Eddie.
Well, that was...
a great job reading our sponsor. You know. Awesome. Eddie, let's talk about these books. Obviously, you can tell I sort of like the Sin Eater saga, but I see opportunities for people to complain about it as well. So... why don't you go and give me what you thought?
I was fairly critical of several aspects, if you heard in my summary when I was talking through them. But you're exactly right that the looming ghost of Sin Eater is a great thing to show this dilemma, this split personality that he has now in like real terms. Like Sin Eater's saying stuff to him all throughout the book and just driving him crazy. And you're also right that Electro has to be in this book because Spider-Man has to fight someone. So it's really well written in that it gives us a chance to deeply move into the Sin Eater character while still having the excitement of a battle going on between Electro and Spider-Man. And thankfully, Max Dillon, we wouldn't describe as a very complicated character. He's just kind of like robbing people.
Sin Eater is shooting up Gene DeWolf, my favorite character. And, you know, that doesn't make me happy at all. And I'm like, oh, I hate this guy. Kill him, kill him. And they come back and they're like, don't forget, he is actually... a victim of what S.H.I.E.L.D. did to him. And yeah. I'm like, yeah, sure. This is just a way for him to kind of get out and cause all kinds of problems. Like every other Green Goblin version that runs around after their,
It's how many times has the parole board been convinced by the Vulture that he should be released from prison?
Give him his costume, et cetera, et cetera. You know, there's the upstanding tea drinking, you know, Dr. Octopus.
Right.
So I'm expecting all these terrible things. And I'm reading these books. And these books hit me in such a way that I'm thinking like even in real life, I'm like, are there people who something happened to them mentally that maybe now they are cured, you know, and maybe now they are safe to be let out? Obviously, you can never know what's going on inside Stan Carter's head or other people's real head. But it got me really thinking. I could really make a good defense attorney after reading this for people with mental illness. I was like, this is good.
Yeah, that twist to actually have Stan Carter being someone that isn't trying to do evil again after getting out of prison. Excellent point, James B.
Yeah. But the book did show that Sin Eater was close to winning the mental
challenge,
the mental battle. And Stan's like, no, I've won. He even says it. I've won. Yeah. Sin Eater's dead. It's like, that's what he needs to do. So, yeah, a really great story. It's going to really stick with me longer than I expected. It was really good. Eddie, do you think we have some time for listener mail?
Absolutely. What's on the docket?
Why don't you read the first one?
All right. This comes from Lawrence Love's family. He says, I live in Tennessee, but born and raised in Romulus, Michigan, 20 minutes away from Ypsilanti. Cool. Keep the great podcast coming. Thanks, Lawrence, for writing in. Yeah, you know.
Do you know where Romulus is?
I absolutely do. I drive past it when I go to the airport every time I am picking someone up or dropping them off. So,
anything you want to, you know, add? Enhance our knowledge of Romulus.
I think that Lawrence and I would both agree that there is not too much more to add about Romulus, Michigan.
Our right. Well, I've had a much longer conversation with Thanos 6, and we've been talking about lots of things. And one thing he wrote that I thought was interesting to share is you might remember that we covered Spider-Man battling Fire Lord.
Yes.
Famously, was I called it the pizza fight, you know. And he wrote the following to us. He said, "You may be amused to know that at least on one large internet message board where people argue about which characters can defeat which characters, this fight is often used as shorthand for a fight so ridiculously one-sided there's no way the underdog ever could have won and should just be ignored." So he wrote, for example, if I write a story where Nathan Lubinsky punched out the Juggernaut, they'd be like, yeah, this is like a Spider-Man versus Fire Lord bull. So good to know that. You know, it's interesting. We didn't cover it that way, though, right? No, we didn't say this is an impossible fight.
We just kind of glaze over these fights because they're often so ridiculous. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, all right, well. I love the Nathan Lubinsky Juggernaut comparison.
Eddie, if people wanted to reach us and talk to us about Romulus or about Fire Lord, how would they do so?
You could email us at letsreadspiderman@gmail.com. Or click on the link in this podcast description to join our Discord channel and connect with us through social media.
And I'm James B., joined by
Eddie!
And something really spectacular was when MJ was telling Peter to take advice from Rocky about not thinking about hitting people, he responds,
"That's like learning opera from Twisted Sister." Goodbye.
Bye.
James B., let's go back to that static electricity that made Spider-Man fall off a wall. It is wild that we are learning new things about a superpower this far into reading Spider-Man.
If you could do this, does it affect only a certain area? Can he, like, you know, how big an area can this guy cover?
I mean, we can assume Electro is very powerful and that he charged the air of at least a half a block, probably.
Okay. So he just aims at Spider-Man. He's like, you, this whole area, static.
I don't think he aims it. He just, like, you know, zaps everything around him. And I can't imagine there's too much power in static electricity.
Well, he's not wearing his costume. Like, is Electro's hair sticking up at this point, too? Or
that would have been really clever if they had drawn that with everybody else, right?
Yeah, like, what's... And Spider-Man can't stick because...
That,
why?
That is the hard part to understand. Like, I don't like getting into these debates about why he can and cannot stick to something. But
what's Dana's expertise again? What is she?
our scientist. This is Dana.
She's not question. Just a scientist. She's like a specific kind of scientist. We keep giving her everything.
Anything science related goes to Dana.
All right. Period. All right. It's fine. That's why we have these people. So, all right. Dana's going to have to get on this. We'll get back to you in a couple episodes with Dana's explanation how electrostatic electricity would stop Spider-Man from...